Welcome to Her Story, a project by Chick History. I'm your host, Rebecca Price. For 1 year, we asked 50 contemporary women to share the story of the historical woman who has inspired her. Join us every week for a new story of inspiration, from the headliners to the lesser-known gems.
Dust off the books, read all the letters, preserve with time. Dig out the truth written between. Her history cannot be left behind. She shall not be forgotten.
Joining me today on the line for Her Story number 2 is Lisa Matz. Lisa is the Director of Public Policy and Government Relations at the American Association of University Women. AAUW advances equity for women and girls through advocacy, education, philanthropy, and research. Lisa is a Phi Beta Kappa graduate of Ohio University and received 2 master's degrees from Ohio State University. She is currently spearheading AAUW's Get Out the Vote campaign, which encourages women to ensure their political power by voting. To learn more about AAUW, you can visit their website at aauw.org, and you can follow Lisa on Twitter at Lisa Matz with 2 A's for a bit of snarky feminism and her opinions on recent news. Lisa, so good to have you, and welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. I've been looking forward to doing this.
Well, please tell us, whose story have you chosen to share with us today?
Well, I have chosen one of my personal heroes, and that is Elizabeth Cady Stanton, who I think gets short shrift. She's really, in many respects, the mother of the first wave of the women's movement. I think her friend Susan B. Anthony gets a lot of the credit, and she did much work, but Elizabeth Cady Stanton was absolutely the brains behind the action. One of the reasons why I selected her is because she truly was a woman who was ahead of her time in many respects. She was born in 1815 in New York and lived her entire life in New York State. She was the daughter of a prominent attorney, and he was even a member of Congress, eventually became a judge. Her mother was a woman who believed in educating her children. And so it's no wonder that she got kind of the education that she did, which was very unusual for the time. She was formally educated all the way up through what essentially would have been a finishing school, which was the only thing that was kind of open for women in New York at that time. What I really love about her is that she went on to do kind of traditionally female things, right? She got married. She was married for 47 years. She had 7 children. But at the same time, she had a very active social advocacy life. She was heavy into the temperance movement and very much then into also the abolitionist movement. And I always find her experience of the abolitionist movement very instructive because it's almost a reinvention or what happened in the 60s in the second wave of the women's movement was almost like a reincarnation of what Elizabeth Cady Stanton experienced. She actually had the nerve at the time to come out against the 14th and 15th Amendments, not because she didn't think that African-American men deserved the vote, but that she thought it should have been universal suffrage. In other words, what about not just white women, but African-American women? It was, in fact, the one time that she really split with Frederick Douglass, the famous abolitionist, because she felt like incrementalism was not the way to go. And as you can imagine, at the time, that was very controversial. And actually caused a fairly big split in the women's movement. So she was absolutely kind of this uppity, radical woman. The other thing, though, that she did was she was the one who really put on the first women's rights convention in the United States. And it came about in kind of a rather fun way. In 1840, as her honeymoon of all things, she and her husband, Henry Stanton, went to the World Anti-Slavery Convention in London. And after much debating, the delegates decided that the women were not going to be allowed to participate, even if they were duly voted delegates to the convention. So they ended up sticking Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Lucretia Mott up in this balcony roped off from all people. And I love to joke about the fact that, boy, are they going to regret that, because as a result, they were able to not only get to know each other and absolutely probably bitch about the decision that was just made, but they actually started to kind of foment, well, what they do moving forward. And 8 years later, in 1848, in Seneca Falls, where Elizabeth Cady Stanton was now living, it's this great little town in the Finger Lakes in upstate New York, we had the first Women's Rights Convention. And it was attended by Frederick Douglass and Sojourner Truth and Lucretia Mott and, you know, Elizabeth Cady Stanton. It was a pretty amazing event, over 300 people, which, you know, at that time was pretty serious. One of the things that she really became known for was her writing ability and her skills as an orator, as a public speaker. And at that convention, she really marshaled through the passage of something called the Declaration of Sentiments, which was this hugely creative idea of essentially taking the Declaration of Independence that, of course, had been so stirring to so many would-be Americans during the Revolutionary War, and turned it into basically women's demands for their own rights, right down to the right to vote, which was actually the first kind of public call for that. It was very controversial. It was a document that some of the folks who came to the convention were afraid to sign, including Amelia Bloomer, who is, you know, also at the time a well-known feminist. They were just unsure that that was the way to go. But the thing that was, I think, even better about Elizabeth Cady Stanton, and would throughout her career make her or differentiate her from Susan B. Anthony, her good friend, whom she met just a few years later, was that Elizabeth Cady Stanton didn't just talk about suffrage, right? I mean, obviously she was a suffragette. She believed women needed the right to vote. The franchise was crucial to independent sovereignty over their own lives, so on and so forth. But she really didn't think that that was the be-all and end-all, that there were so many other issues that needed to be tackled. She was hugely interested in women's property rights, in women's ability to divorce, particularly in a situation if the husband was a drunkard or was an abusive guy. She wanted women to be able to divorce, to be able to inherit property, to be able to retain custody of their children, which was a huge issue at the time. She cared about those property rights. She also was really talking about employment and wage rights. So you can see much more broad than the more traditional, much more narrow women's suffrage movement. She even had the nerve to talk about birth control. Now you have to remember this was happening in the 1850s, right? So this is 31 years before AUW was formed. She was absolutely, she wasn't just cutting edge. She had fallen off the edge at this point. But she met Susan B. Anthony in 1851. And one of the things that was interesting about that is that it really became like this lifelong friendship, not without its tensions, because they had disagreements, but this lifelong friendship that was so fruitful for women. While Susan B. Anthony really did tend to concentrate more on the suffrage, she was a single woman. She didn't have any kids. She could travel around in a way that, the seven-time mom, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, could not. And so it became very clear, even though Elizabeth Cady Stanton was a great orator, that she ended up doing most of the writing, most of the thinking, even putting together Susan B. Anthony's speeches. In fact, Susan B. Anthony used to say that it was Elizabeth Cady Stanton that gave her the firebolts to throw, rhetorically. And so there was this real kind of, not just companionship, but there was this real sense of teamwork there between the two of them. Of course, Susan B. Anthony was much more of like the tactician, the organizer. And so their skills were very complementary and really helped them to move forward. Anyway, in terms of Elizabeth Cady Stanton, what I think is so wonderful is that she had this traditional life. She was able to, despite a husband who didn't always want her to do this, She kept her name, Elizabeth Cady Stanton. She talked about issues beyond suffrage and the vote. She talked about women as sovereign beings that were subjugated by oppression. And her intense support for temperance, her intense support for abolition, didn't get in the way of what she wanted to do with women's suffrage. And in fact, when she felt like the abolitionists were telling the feminists, hey, you know, wait your turn, let's get the vote for black men, then we'll think about women. You know, that's the same thing that happened in the second wave in the 60s and 70s, right? We had the student rights movement and the civil rights movement and the women's rights movement. And there was very much this sense, you know, oh, women, you'll get your turn. You know, a lot of women cut their teeth in the civil rights movement, in the second wave, and in the abolitionist and temperance movement of the first wave. And it was their treatment in those movements. It was the way that they saw that they were not valued that in many, many respects gave life to the women's movement. And she's a fabulous example of that.
What are some of the things about her or that she has done that you find so fascinating?
Well, you know, one of the, I think, most radical things that she did was take on Christianity, take on religion. Now, again, keeping in mind that this is happening at this time more in the late 1800s, but still, she actually wrote something called the Women's Bible. And this was a feminist take on scripture. Now, imagine that the heresy that many people would have thought of this particular effort. You know, imagine the guts, you know, the just sheer courage it took not only to write this, but to put it out there publicly and put her name on it. I mean, I hazard to say that if someone were to try and do that today, there would be no end of attacks on them, you know, from folks from Fox News or the Christian right. And this was someone who did it in 1890. But essentially, her whole point of putting together that women's Bible was to show that Christianity, you know, simply relegated women to a second-class citizenship as it was currently being understood. And that if you truly looked at it through the viewpoint of liberation theology, that it actually could be the liberator and the mechanism through which you could see women and understand and know that women were equal beings with the same worth as men. I love that she also ran for Congress. she didn't have the vote, but she ran for Congress. The other thing is that she was a modern day activist, not only in terms of thinking and writing and speaking and doing that kind of thought work. But she really was an on-the-ground activist when she could. And she's really credited also for passing the Women's Property Act in New York, which was one of the first bills ever passed in the country that allowed women to retain their property when they got married or when their husbands died, and gave them some rights in divorce, which, as you could imagine, was hugely important for women at the time. She also testified before Congress about suffrage and the need to get the women the vote. So she, especially towards the end of her life, was able to travel more, made money doing that, raised her 7 kids. But at the end of the day, she was just someone who did not give up. One of the things that I just wanted to do quickly here was to read a quote from her that I think is really brilliant and talks about why she cares so much about these particular issues and kind of was able to put together religion and women's rights and abolition and temperance and all those things. She said, "The general discontent that I feel with women's portion as wife, housekeeper, physician, and spiritual guide, the chaotic conditions into which everything fell without her constant supervision, and the worried, anxious look of the majority of women impressed upon me with a strong feeling that some active measures should be taken to remedy the wrongs of society in general, and of women in particular. My experience at the World Anti-Slavery Convention, all that I had read of the legal status of women, and the oppression that I saw everywhere, together swept across my soul, intensified now by many personal experiences. It seemed as if all the elements had conspired to impel me in some way to move onward. I could not see what to do or where to begin. My only thought was a public meeting for protest and discussion. So it started as simple as that. My only thought was that I had to talk to other people about this this unjust travesty. So, you know, to me, that's the inspiration for all of the women's movement today. Someone sees something that's wrong and works to right it.
Now, as far as a book recommendation goes, what is the one thing listeners should go out and get to start learning more about her?
Well, you know, I'm going to be a little unconventional here, obviously, because I think if you want to learn about Elizabeth Cady Stanton, one of the best and most enjoyable ways is to actually watch Ken Burns's documentary. He did a fabulous documentary about the lifelong friendship of Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony. It's called Not For Ourselves Alone. And it's an amazing kind of look at the work, at her life, at kind of the fruits of her labor. But you can also get to know her more intimately. You can read her Women's Bible, which was published in two different parts in the late 1890s. And then there's also an autobiography that she published in 1897, called Reflections. She died actually in 1905, so unfortunately she did not get to see votes for women herself, but I feel very confident in saying it never would have happened had it not been for her.
Well, there you have it for Elizabeth Cady Stanton. Lisa, thank you so much for sharing her story with us.
You're welcome. Pleased to do so.
To learn more about her story and other projects by Chick History, you can visit the website chickhistory.com. And please join us every week for another story of an inspirational woman in history.
I'm here to tell a story, something precious and fine, about a woman who made a difference with her life. She might not be known, but to only a few, her story remembered here is gonna change that view. Her history cannot be left behind. She shall not be forgotten. Her story not forgotten.